Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, joined by John Crumpler. And hey, John, this week we have a very special guest. We have none other than Rivers McCown on the podcast. Hey, Rivers, how you doing?
Wow, I'm special. Look at me. Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going very good, man. We're excited to have you on. Breakdown, it's been a busy week for Houston.
Yeah, just slightly. Just been slightly busy, that's all.
A little chaotic.
Yeah, you know, with lefties at cheesesteaks not paying the rent, allegedly. I mean, it's been a busy week.
Yeah, we got to have the full 610 crew on that one.
Still can't believe that happened.
Hey, Rivers, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Rivers McCown, MCCOWN, because you are Texans fans listening to this, I assume. At this point, most of you should be familiar with how to spell McCown.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because it could be the next head coach after all. Where can they find you, John?
You guys can follow me at Texans Doc. Mark, what about yourself?
At The Real Mark Lane on Twitter. Also follow The Texans Wire at The Texans Wire. But really, in all seriousness, Rivers, this past week, the Texans, they finally traded Deshaun Watson. Do you think that Houston got fair value for Watson? What were your impressions from the trade?
I don't think they were ever going to get fair value for Watson. And that's just kind of a nod to that no trade clause that he was given way back in 2020. Once that kind of set the market, it was hard for them to, because I mean, in reality, we're talking about a franchise quarterback in his prime without the legal questions. Like, the market for that should be, you know, like 7 first round picks. Like, it should be unfathomable. And this just is kind of what happened. And we got to be okay with it.
Are you happy with the trade that they ultimately did arrive with the no trade clause?
All I wanted out of this was the 3 first round picks. Once we started talking about all these players, it was like, that's nice. Okay. I get why people are getting excited about this, but I think the 3 firsts were kind of all that I had my heart set on at that point. And obviously, I know it's weird to say, but it's about somebody who kind of hates your organization, but it sucks to see Watson gone. And of course, somebody who did the heinous things that he allegedly did, but yeah, it's going to be a hard watch for the next couple of years, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, Watson, he represented hope for the Texans franchise that I don't think they'd ever really had before. The kind of quarterback that you really felt like you could win any game. You felt like you were Super Bowl contenders with Watson there the next decade. And then Rivers, I kind of use you as my moral compass for realistic expectations for Houston. And even I found myself getting swept up in excitement for ultimately it was just the 3 first rounders.
Yeah, I'm just there to kind of walk around Texas Twitter and just knock people on the back of the head like, come on, be real. This isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I think when they threw in the prospect of players, it had people thinking that the Watson trade, you would get your 3 first round picks so that you could invest for the future. And then depending upon the players you got, you could accelerate the rebuild and compete right now and at least be a thorn in the side to the Titans and Colts who are actually trying to win the division. But then when the players didn't manifest, then it's like, well, I guess this is an entirely next year's champions type of draft haul.
Yeah, I guess what I was thinking when people started bringing up the players is if I were a player and I was any good and I got traded to the Houston Texans, would I actually want to be there? And like when you're talking about Cesar Ruiz or somebody like that who's young, like I kind of get that. But let's start talking about AJ Terrell. I was like, if AJ Terrell comes here, what he's going to do is ask out.
What about if it was somebody like Christian McCaffrey and he ended up coming to the Texans?
Oof, man. I would understand that there wouldn't be a lot of value in trading him now. So I don't know how that would have worked out, but that would have been interesting for sure. I mean, it's got a rich history of David Johnson.
I think running backs just want to get paid. So I think Christian McCaffrey would have been fine to do his thing and win four or five games of us while he probably shows up in 10 of them.
Well, but Bill O'Brien's not here anymore. I don't know if he could have got that big contract for a running back.
He's already on a pretty big deal, isn't he? I think they had to restructure him this week. They're getting ready to bring in – is it Dwayne Brown who's allegedly going to Carolina?
Yeah, they were talking to Dwayne Brown. He does have a enormous contract, yes, already.
All right, this is a question that's not on our agenda, but I do want to talk about it. Do you guys think that the suspension optics have changed any in the past week with how public this has been all over? I mean, it's everywhere on Fox and ESPN and people kind of outraged about it. And then you factor in Cleveland protected his money. They put his $46 million salary, 45 of it turned into a signing bonus so that a suspension can't touch it. Do you think the optics of this whole thing have potentially changed how long Watson might be suspended for?
Not really. But, I mean, the optics were always going to be bad for that restructure anyway, because I kind of feel like Watson was always destined to have a low base salary for this year to try to fit in as many, you know, win-now guys as possible, get your Will Fullers and your Clownies and all that stuff all together in Cleveland. So I'm not saying that I think the suspension is going to be light. I do think that there's a fair chance it'll be 8 games. I think I would say probably be 6. I think that's about where we're headed. But I don't think that any extra. I don't think it would have mattered beyond him getting traded in the first place at this point.
Yeah. That's the thing is the. People look at the 22 allegations in the civil suit, but there's also that element of the NFL conducting its own investigation, and that's going to warrant its own punishments that may or may not have anything to do with it. And I think that the NFL, you feel like they have to do something, you know, that they can't just let the that they can't just let there be no punishment on their end.
I think they will suspend him for, like Rivers said, I would think maybe 8 games and it's negotiated down to 6 on appeal or maybe 10-8. But anything more than that would just be, I don't know, unless he is if he's found guilty in civil court, which is not going to happen. They're going to settle these things. The precedent would say no more than half the season, and it's going to be for conduct detrimental to the league.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that I don't have to talk about that anymore. that's the one thing that I'm actually glad. The one reason that even though I think Deshaun Watson is going to be a much better player than anybody the Texans get back from this pick, like I think the odds are in favor of that by a lot. I'm very glad that I'm thinking about any more court settlements or rooting interests or whatever with all the allegations.
True.
Definitely. With Houston having 2 first round picks for the next 3 drafts, really 22, you don't figure that they're going to take a quarterback in at all. But in terms of 23 and 24, don't you think that having those 2 first round picks per draft allows them the capital to maybe go find a franchise quarterback should one come available?
Yeah, it definitely helps a lot. I don't know if teams are going to see those Browns picks as great value just because I feel like with Watson, they're probably going to, you know, win 9 games at the least for most of these years. But I do think that, for sure, they will be a big help, and I think the Texans probably will have to give up 3 ones to move up at some point, and then we get to do that again.
Rivers, are you insinuating that Davis Mills is not the answer?
You know, it's funny. I've been higher on Davis Mills than the Texans fans' consensus for a while, And I don't think that he's got no chance of being the answer. But that's mostly because I think he grew a lot, and I like to see my players in their first year take noticeable big steps. I don't think if the Davis Mills that we saw in week 17 or week 18 played for, you know, the entirety of next season, that anybody would be happy with that as a franchise quarterback. But I think there's a chance still.
Yeah. He's in such a tough spot. It's because if they don't win games, which is ultimately what it's going to come down to, the talent on this team suggests they're going to be in a position to take a CJ Stroud or a Bryce Young. So I'm with you. I think that Davis Mills can do it. The deck just seems so stacked against him right now.
Well, the Texans did nothing to help him either. That's the thing. That's the big thing. You look at free agency, you see you got all these Jaguars wideouts brought in for $30 million a year, and the Texans have brought back Chris Conley. And, you know, I've got nothing bad to say about Chris Conley. His YouTube videos are a delight. But I don't think that you go into a season with him as, you know, fighting with Nico Collins for a number two receiver spot and say, oh, man, well, this team is set. Now I know exactly how I can evaluate Davis Mills.
Well, they're going to be a run-first team, though, Rivers.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, great. They were only one of the 10 worst teams in NFL history at running last year. I'm sure it'll be great in 2022.
Hey, you gotta have faith in George Warhop, though. Yeah. It really does look like, he's really in a tough spot. What I would like to see them do is not go with an old guy at running back. Maybe pick up Isaiah Spiller, or just actually use a top 100 pick on a running back as opposed to trying to do an undrafted free agent thing or sign an old guy, which has kind of been the organization's thing, regardless of whether it's Caserio or O'Brien, really going back to Arian Foster.
I mean, I'm going to miss the articles and the tweets that are dripping with sarcasm about how the Texans are brave enough to design an entire offense around Rex Burkhead. But I agree with you, Mark, that it's time to invest in the position. And I would say they could even wait until day three if they were willing to sign a Sony Michel or a Ronald Jones. But they seem very content to run it back with – I mean, Marlon Mack was in town. We'll see if he comes in. But even then, I think Marlon Mack would not eliminate a day two guy. But as of right now, Royce Freeman and Rex Burkhead – you kind of have to take someone in the top 100.
So when you guys sent me, when John sent me the agenda, I looked this over, and we're talking about the first day picks. I was like, oh man, I'm not going to get to talk about the hot take that I'm building up in secret. But I guess now that you guys mentioned running backs, I can do this. I think I would take Breece Hall, 37th overall.
Really?
I think I would.
With all the other needs,
I would endorse that.
I think I would do that. There's something that about watching him where I feel kind of like I felt about Jonathan Taylor, where I'm like, this looks too easy. I'm doing something wrong. I'm not seeing something right. This looks too easy for him. And I know that feels like a weird endorsement, but kind of like I don't see the flaws. I don't see what I'm supposed to see. And that makes me think either I'm very right or I have messed up.
I've seen some traction on Twitter this week that Breece Hall could be at the back of the first. He seems to be the consensus RB1 or as close to it as we have in this class. Do you think he's that much better than a Kenneth Walker or a Spiller?
I really do. Yeah, I really do. I think Kenneth Walker is fine. I think he could be a solid franchise back. I think he's got that kind of potential. I'm not quite as high on Spiller. But I think when I watch Breece Hall play, when I watch Breece Hall, you know, deal with guys in the backfield, when I watch him deal with his reads, like I'm finding it very hard to nitpick him beyond like I was saying about Taylor, like things where like, oh, well, he fumbles a little bit more than you like. Oh, he doesn't catch the ball as much as you like. Like, I mean, that's good. That's all well and good, but that's not like a real criticism of his running style. And I think he's just got it, man. I think he's got it.
I mean, when you say it out loud, it really does feel like something the organization would consider. I mean, Lovie has a history of leaning on franchise backs. I think he's always kind of had a bell cow in his offenses, and then they're not doing anything else to bolster the position.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to understand what this team will do with premium assets because they haven't really had them for 3 years now, I feel like. So, but like, it's easy to just say that, like, the dots will add up. I'm not sure if they'll actually be able to do that or want to do that. But, I mean, I don't – even at 13, even at 3, I'm open to, like, so many possibilities right now. I can see so many different things happening.
Yeah. Like, what do you think they should do at 13? I mean, it really, to me, kind of, what would you do at 3? And then what would you do at 13? But just, I don't know, what would you do with that extra first rounder?
This is also a pro Kyle Hamilton podcast, just so you know. So be careful, Rivers.
Oh, I actually like the Kyle Hamilton fit a lot, honestly.
Yes.
Now that means they won't draft him. Because, see, this is where I feel like when Texans Twitter endorses someone that then the organization goes away from. Isn't that what happened with Jonathan Taylor? Wasn't he someone that Texans fans wanted?
Yes.
And then, oh, he didn't end up in Houston?
Yes, Ross Blacklock was picked right before him.
Yeah, so the more I think about it, I'll have to cogitate on this, but I think by April 2nd, we need to start coming out and saying, nah, Kyle Hamilton at 3, nah, we can't do that. It's awful.
Well, I'll tell you what I would do at 3 is not what the Texans will do at 3, and that's, I think, Kayvon Thibodeau is the best player in the class. But I think that kind of the effort questions, kind of the combine stuff, their inability to understand if he likes football or not because he has outside interests. Like, I think those are all factors where I'd be surprised if he was a Texan.
Rivers, is he Christian?
I actually don't know.
Because Kyle Hamilton went to Notre Dame, and he went to a Catholic high school.
I do think there's some potential for galaxy braining at 3 too. Like I wouldn't just narrow it down to Hamilton and Trayvon and call it a day. Like I think there's a couple of different things they could do.
Okay, let's just take this scenario. You get Kayvon Thibodeau at number 3. Now what do we do at 13?
So I've been torn about 13 since the Texans have had it at this point. I haven't really done anything that makes me comfortable. I would want to trade back, obviously. I think the Texans should want to trade back whenever they can in this draft. I think if I had to just settle on somebody right now, it'd probably be Drake London. I think he kind of fits the Texans' height, weight, physical characteristic box for wide receivers. They like the big boys. I think he can be like a post threat in the slot. I think he can do some Juju Smith-Schuster kind of things. So I don't know that that's like ultimately fulfilling what you want at 13, but I think he's the guy who I keep gravitating towards as like, well, he's safe and he fits kind of what I think the Texans like.
Do you think he would be redundant at all with Nico Collins also having a profile of a bigger receiver?
No, because you matchup hunt, and I mean, the team will, you know, they'll say all the right things about what they what Nico's future holds. They'll say all the right things about that, but when you look at what happened last year, you got to have a big second year leap for him to be counted on at this point. And I'm not saying that I don't like his odds. You know, he was obviously they traded up for him for a reason, but just on the pure output last year, when you have a big ball end zone receiver and he has like, you know, three red zone catches all year, it's not great.
Yeah. Wait, how do you feel about Jordan Davis?
I wouldn't mind Jordan Davis at all.
Mark, who's your favorite at 13?
I don't know. It's difficult because I keep seeing Trent McDuffie, and you know how I've talked about how I want to establish a no-fly zone. So if taking Hamilton at 3, then when you get to 13, I would probably want to get Trent McDuffie, and maybe that would be the right range to gamble on Derek Stingley if he's there. So I would want to shore up my defense with both of those picks. I saw, and we had it at Texans Wire, Mel Kiper, he had Houston taking Ikem Ekwonu at number 3 overall, which, because, get this, they need someone on the right side. Because apparently Tytus Howard is just going to stay at guard, even though, anyway. And then he had them taking Lloyd Davis at number 13. So it's like, they're going to get just a linebacker, you know, at 13. I don't know. I'm not that committed to fixing the defense to do something like that. But if I could get established guys in the secondary, that's what I would do at 13.
I just worry that Lovie's defense is not conducive to having – I mean, you obviously need good guys in the secondary, but – and Rivers, you might be more equipped to talk on this than me, but from what I understand about the Tampa 2, I'm worried that too many – or too much investment in the secondary just won't pay off for how much the scheme requires of the front seven.
Yeah, it's kind of a philosophical thing for sure. I don't think that the Texans would rule out any cornerback prospects at this point. I do think that they know that they need upgrades there, especially if they can push Desmond King inside where he actually belongs. So I definitely think it's on the radar. I think the guy who I keep gravitating back toward this guy is someone who I think the Texans will pick. I think either at 13 or maybe even at 3 in like a stunner, I could see George Karloftis coming off the board.
No.
Yep.
Is he even is he a lock to go top 15?
I mean, it's all about what one team thinks of you, right?
He's probably my fourth favorite. I mean, Jermaine Johnson, I like him better than Karloftis. I think Trayvon Walker is consensus higher. Thibodeau, Hutchinson.
You gotta remember that it's about the off-field stuff too. It's about the intensity, about how much effort put in. Nick Caserio wants to see those practice GPSs, okay? And I think Karloftis is one of the guys who's going to test really well in that, in those areas.
Yeah. And when you consider that, that makes sense. Because when he talked about taking Brevin Jordan with the 5th-round pick last year, it was because he was going to foment competition at the position. And when you heard Caserio talk about over the weekend, their free agent class, they signed guys who were great veteran presences and would show the younger guys how it's done. So that makes sense why they would go in that particular direction.
They really do, as I pointed out in a big article today, they really do have a type.
And we'll definitely talk about that article a little later because it was fascinating, and it really does get into the essay question of the podcast this week, which is what's the Texans culture. But right now, the Texans, they've got some pretty decent cap space. $28.2 million in cap space after the first wave of free agency. Do you think they're going to try to do anything with this, or are they just going to use it to sign their draft class? I mean, can Houston fans expect maybe a splash in the second wave of free agency at all?
No. No, I don't think so. I do think a lot of it will go toward the rookie class. I know that I think Texans cap put it at $16 million as an estimate. Please don't take that as fact, though.
Cap space on over the cap, yeah.
Yeah, please don't take that as gospel. I don't actually remember, but I know it was a fair chunk of 28 million, and I know they still have some contracts left that need to come in, like the Grugier Hill one and all that. So yeah, I would be floored if the Texans signed anybody of major importance at this point.
I agree with you. It just doesn't seem in line with what they want to do. If there was anyone they were going to bring in that was a major player, I'm still shocked, and this is going to start bleeding into what you wrote about in your article, so I'll try not to go too far into it, but how many of their own that they brought back? Clearly, Caserio has a vision for how the 2022 team is supposed to look, and it would appear to just be the 2021 team plus largely the same role players and some rookies.
Well, the good news is that 2021 team was really successful. Just please don't look up anything that happened to them or ask what happened to their head coach.
Just look at the takeaway statistics. Just look at that.
Don't 25 look at anything turnovers. Else. We all know how reliable that stat is from year to year, too. So at least we know we can build on the turnovers.
Going up to 35 next year. You heard it here first. NFL Network.
Did someone actually say that on NFL Network?
They had I hope I don't mess this up. DB Sidhu, the Texans.
Okay. Reporter. So they had her on NFL Network, and she said that it would go up to 35.
No, she interviewed a bunch of NFL personalities. I think she had like Daniel Jeremiah, the guy who does Red Zone. Bucky Brooks, that sort of thing.
And they said it.
And they were all like pumping up like, oh yeah, that can, I think that'll go by 5. I think it'll go by 8. And I'm just like, what are we talking about?
Okay, guys? I think it could if and only if you sign Bobby Wagner, let's say. If what? And only if Kyle Hamilton is Michael Parsons. I don't know that it's going to increase, but because it took them all of that effort just to get in the top 10 with 25. Okay? I can't believe people were actually saying 35.
I do wonder how much of that is nature nurture, like, because they do coach this all very hard. There are definitely plays from last season that come to mind, like the Terrence Mitchell strip of Damian Harris at the goal line, where I'm like, okay, that's something that they're actively going for. So I don't think it's going to crater either, but I don't know if it's going to be 25 again.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that it's going to go up to 30. I mean, you would really have to add some all-pro talent to the, I mean, Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher better be coming out of that tunnel to play linebacker.
I think 20 would be super reasonable. I mean, we also have to factor in we're not going to have Trevor Lawrence with the Urban Meyer scheme giving us, what, 5 or 6 by himself? I know there were 3 or 4 the first game.
How's
it
Urlacher?
May not rain in Nashville.
oh, I forgot about Tannehill. Yeah.
It may not rain in Nashville with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones gone, and him throwing to, like, Des Fitzpatrick, who can barely run routes. Yeah, that might not happen again.
I can't even believe they, speaking of the turnovers, that they got as many as they did against the Dolphins, but also gave up as many. I mean, that was probably... And I know they got beat 40-0 in week 4, but I think that particular game was the worst.
The Taylor pick where he's like drifting out of bounds and somehow he keeps it like just far enough in for Baker to intercept will live in my brain for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's almost as bad as getting an intentional grounding on trying to throw the ball away.
Was that his last start? Did Taylor make it another week after that?
Yeah, it was that. Then I think it was the rain game in Nashville.
Yep.
No, it was that bye week, rain game in Nashville, Jets, then Colts. So that's there was like four more weeks of that.
I've tried to block out as much of the 2021 season as possible. The end result and some of the plays are sticking with me, but what a cluster of a season.
That's a healthy way to approach that, actually. It's better not to think about losing to Carson Wentz twice. It really is.
By 28 points. I think they lost in four touchdowns each game, too, which is real impressive.
Hard to do.
Yeah.
Also,
and now
this is a,
well, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is a good transition point. Rivers, what did you think of the Matt Ryan acquisition by the Indianapolis Colts? Personally, for me, I think it raises their ceiling a good bit. I think he's more consistent, less turnover prone. I could see Indianapolis winning 11 or 13 games. How did you interpret the move?
It's nice. I don't know. I'm not like blown away by it. I did watch a fair number of Atlanta games last year as part of the NBC Sports job of giving me recaps of the Atlanta Falcons for some reason over and over again. And I can tell you that Matt Ryan looked awfully Roethlisberger-y at times. Like there were real moments of my offensive line's breaking down. I don't know what to do. I'm going to throw it and hope. I do think he's, you know, functional. I kind of think of him more in the Philip Rivers mold than like Matt Ryan in prime mode. And so while I like the Colts team in general and expect them to do well anyway, I'm not like, oh, well, this team's hunting for Super Bowl now. I think they're hunting for the number four seed or, you know, maybe number three.
I mean, he doesn't – what kind of weapons does he have? You've got Jonathan Taylor. What other passing targets would Ryan even have in Indianapolis compared to what he would have in Atlanta?
I mean, Atlanta was pretty dreadful on their own. I mean, Zaccheaus Olmide and Russell Gage were their number one and two receivers for most of the year. But yeah, Indianapolis doesn't look a ton better. It'll be Nyheim Hines and the kid from USC who am I thinking of?
Yeah, Pittman. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Pittman actually came on pretty well last year. Fun fact, Pittman's dad played in Ryan's rookie year.
Yeah, that's just sad. Okay, but you would have Ryan thrown to those guys. But really what he might have is, again, a running back, Jonathan Taylor, to take the heat off of him so he doesn't have to carry the entire offense like he was having to do with the Falcons. Yeah, I think it would be kind of like – it'd be somewhere in between the last year of Andrew Luck and Philip Rivers. I don't think that it's going to be like Carson Wentz or Jacoby Brissett in terms of the downside, but I think they could – this could solve their quarterback problems just for a year.
I think Reich is an underrated offensive play caller somehow. I think that he doesn't get enough credit for all that he managed to do with Carson Wentz last year, honestly. And so, you know, you add like any quarterback with a pulse. Like I would have said the Colts could win eight or nine games if they had Marcus Mariota quarterback. Like, Not even somebody good, just somebody who could like improve that run game a little bit, make it a little spicy. But with an actual quarterback, yeah, I think they're still gonna be good. And obviously they get four games against the Texans and Jaguars to help them out.
And we all think they're better than
the Jaguars in Jacksonville, though.
Well, yeah, that's true. That is hard for them.
What do you guys expect from Tennessee this year? While we're talking about the division, because I think they'll take a step back. I don't know why I feel that way. Maybe it's because Tannehill is starting to show some of the concerns that a lot of people have when he signed that contract extension. But do you think they'll take a step backwards, be largely the same?
I'm worried about their offensive line. They had to cut Roger Saffold for cap space. Taylor Lewan took a step back last year. And I know that it kind of got better as it went along, But when you get dunked on like four times by Chandler Jones in week one, that's not great. He's getting older. And the thing with Tannehill has always been, he's got a cannon. He's very smart with his reads. Like, he gets through them pretty quickly. But he is very sack prone. And so if I were the Titans, that would be concerning for me, running an offensive line that wasn't good already last year back out there. And now you've just got like Ben Jones and Taylor Lewan, and then, you know, Nate Davis is a good run blocker. And you're like, well, we'll figure it out. I'm not saying they're going to like falter, you know, do a devastating place or anything, but I think they're, you know, more 10-11 than number one seed.
Yeah, I think they missed their window. I think they missed their shot. And also Derrick Henry is, you know, he's taken on some mileage too.
I like the Robert Woods trade a lot for them, though. I mean, I think that was a good pickup. I definitely can see that helping them a lot more than Julio did last year. So, I mean, I don't think they're just like gonna collapse or anything, but I do think, yeah, they're already looking, like, you can see them going to these pro days. They're already looking at that quarterbacks to replace Tannehill. So they know what's up.
Yeah, why would you trade for Robert Woods, though, when you can get Blake Cashman for a 6th-round pick?
I would rather have Ryan Finley.
The 2-month rental?
I don't know. He could beat the Steelers.
With his running. What they should have done is made Ryan Finley the running back. That would have made sense.
Yeah. Well, hey, if Jeff Driscoll can be tight end, they should have made Ryan Finley a running back. You know, then he could have helped out with the 3.4 yards per carry.
Yeah, honestly, if they had used Driscoll as like a monotony breaker, run first quarterback to do read option stuff, like, I would have found that infinitely more interesting than some of the things they did in offense last year.
Yeah, well, I don't think Casario was suggesting that on the headsets. My favorite, though, just in one of my favorite memories of the 2021 Texans, is Philip Lindsay running right up the middle for no gain.
Which
time?
Yeah, which one?
That's what I mean. It's just, let's take this 5'8" back and run him right up the A gap for no gain.
What I'll remember is the time against the Colts in the first game that he got loose for like a 40 something yard run in the middle of a blowout, and that raised his stats to the point where he was no longer averaging like 1.3 yards per carry or something.
Yeah, that might be worthy of a celebration too. Hey, Rivers, you wrote a really great article at riversmccown.com, and it's really what Texans fans are wondering, and they've been wondering since January 6th of 2021. And that's, what's the culture for the Houston Texans? So when you look at culture ball, as you call it, just where is this going?
I mean, I think the ultimate bet here, as I kind of lay out in the piece, is that the Texans believe in their idiosyncrasies, their traits that they want for how they want these guys to work, how they want them to practice, how they want them to absorb knowledge. You know, they have all their little intangibles checklisted, and they value those guys. They value them more than talented players. And that's why you have things like half the team returning from last year. They really believe that these guys have passed kind of their culture test. They want them around to teach the young players how to play. And obviously, I wrote the piece, I'm not a fan of that. I don't think it's smart. I kind of think that they haven't earned any respect or cachet to pull this off. But it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what Cal McNair thinks, and he thinks this is fine. So we're doing this, and we're hoping that it's working.
Is there any precedent for a team trying to run this way? I'm trying to think, and it really is. They have this unfounded belief that what they're doing, which is different from how the rest of the NFL runs, will work. Have we seen anything like this before?
I mean, sure, but it's never been, it never happened in this era of history where everything, the most minute things are covered. Like in, I don't know, 1973, Duke Johnson getting traded for a third rounder doesn't crack anybody's radar, you know? It's not really a thing that matters, let alone, you know, somebody getting benched before the game because they violated a team rule. Like, all of this has happened in the past. Football is very cyclical. It's just that it's never been so public before, and that's what people are having problems with.
So, who are some talented players that Houston could have had a shot at that they, you know, went bypassed in favor of culture guys?
So I kind of lay out in the article that I think the players the Texans should have attacked in free agency were guys who would become, you know, 28, 27 in 2024, which is kind of when I think their next competition opportunity would be. So I had guys like Tim Settle on there. I had the Pittsburgh receiver, James, I'm forgetting his last
name. James Washington.
James Washington. And just a list of guys like that who I think, I don't know that they're going to be good. I know that they're young and they've got talent, and I know that they can express that if given a chance. And this is, if nothing else, a place where somebody can come and get a chance. And so, I mean, listen, would I have been thrilled if they signed J.C. Jackson? I would have, actually. I think that would have been a nice, how do I put this? Just a nice gift to the fans. Like, hey, we know you're struggling. We're going to give you something. This guy is really good. I don't think that players like that want to play here, and I understand how that kind of works out, so I get it. So where I'm at is you kind of got to try to find reclamation guys, boost them up, and hope that they are here in 2024.
I actually thought you made a really nice point in the article that, well, the sentiment around the fan base has been that Houston gets a pass for this offseason, which probably isn't fair to begin with, but the narrative around free agency is that there's not a lot of money to spend because of all the dead money allocated to this year. And therefore it's a somewhat more acceptable strategy to just bring back your own free agents. But you laid out the point that next offseason, there's over $100 million in cap space and that these contracts could be written. They could be backloaded to, as you're calling them, the blank slate Texans.
I do have a way of making them sound bad, don't I? Yeah. I guess I kind of do. Well, yeah, I mean, the 2023 Texans at this point, we don't know what they're going to be. You know, Laramie Tunsil has a $35 million cap hit, and that's probably not going to stay one way or the other. I assume at some point they're going to re-sign Brandon Cooks this offseason, right? I think. Like that would make all the sense in the world. I don't know why that hasn't been done yet. Maybe they're too busy with the Watson stuff, but yeah, I mean, other than those two and the rookies, there is going to be, you know, nothing here that's nailed down. Just guys on the second year of a two-year deal, like Justin Britt, like Christian Kirksey, where I can see them retaining value, and I can also see them just getting hurt and never playing again. So, yeah, I mean, we really have no idea what to expect for 2023, and that's kind of why I thought it was weak that people were willing to excuse the austerity.
It's also so funny in contrast of how you see Houston talk about Jacksonville, and we're set to do the exact same thing next offseason, where the Texans, barring a very unexpected performance in 2022 where they win more games than I think we would all have them somewhere between 2 and 6 wins, maybe 7 wins if Davis Mills really steps forward. But they're going to have to overpay. They're going to have to pay B-plus guys A-plus money to start turning this thing around.
And I don't think they will. I don't think there's any reason to believe that they will at this point. When you listen to Nick Caserio talk, one of the things he's always talking about is, well, I'm very fiscally responsible. I don't want to hand out contracts that break the bank. And you look at kind of what happened in New England. As soon as Nick Caserio left, they were like, hey, Rumspringa, let's sign Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry and whoever else and just do it up. So I do think that there is a part of me that's really doubting, even with $100 million of cap space, if that happens. I do think that there is every chance that Nick Caserio will not sign anybody big.
Which is why it looks like they're going to build through the draft. So you better hit on those guys. One thing I've noticed about teams that build through the draft is then they use that cap space to retain their homegrown products. So, I mean, they're really banking on, honestly, one of the most unproven, not really unproven, but when you build through the draft, it's like you're going to own your division. But you've got to take a little more risk and go get free agents, or in the case of the Rams, just be liberal and trade away those first round picks to bring in guys. You've got to do something to push the franchise over the top. And if he builds through the draft only, then they're just going to run the AFC South.
You know,
if lucky.
You know, it was very interesting how, because Lovie Smith is a much better communicator than Nick Caserio is as far as what the public wants to hear. He really got that whole Cincinnati Bengals comparison going this year. And that's interesting to me because the Bengals have done this whole, oh, we're just going to keep drafting thing. And then they started paying players like DJ Reader. And then I saw them in the Super Bowl. Funny how that works out.
It's just a coincidence, though.
Funny how that works out. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Texans are going to have so many draft picks over the next, 2 years if they want them. I'm assuming there's going to be some trade-ups because I think that's kind of what the Nico Collins thing showed us, that if they really want a guy who's a tier above, that they're going to go get that guy. But they will have holes. And how they attack those holes is very important. Retaining those players that they draft, also very important, which is a lesson from many years of Rick Smith history that perhaps the Texans might want to consider learning.
Yeah, and speaking of history, what did you make of Tyreek Hill going for the draft haul that he did on Wednesday?
Kind of a trade where I don't think anybody got better, but the only reason that it happened was because of the Devontae Adams trade, that contract, and Tyreek Hill being like, hey, I'm worth that contract. And to be fair, based on how he's played, I agree with him, but the Chiefs obviously are like, that's interesting. You're 28-year-old receiver. You're probably going to lose your speed pretty soon. See ya. And I get it from that perspective, but honestly, it sucks as an NFL fan that they broke up Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. I don't need to know what Tua Tagovailoa is going to do with Tyreek Hill. I don't think it's going to be the beautiful game that Patrick Mahomes has with him. And I feel like that's a big loss for just casual football watchers.
Does it remind you of Bill O'Brien trading away DeAndre Hopkins, though, and only getting a second, a fourth, and David Johnson in return?
It honestly didn't until I saw the tweets that were all like, hey, remember that? And I was like, oh, we're really going to have to remember that? Man. It's funny, though, because people were like upset about, because I retweeted something, people were upset at me that I was beating the dead horse. Like, I saw the dead horse beaten in front of me for like an hour, and somebody asked me a direct question and I answered it. I don't think about the DeAndre Hopkins trade every day. I promise you. I live a normal life. I have food to make, video games to play, and whatnot. So it's not lingering in my head forever. But it is funny that every big wide receiver trade now gets compared, and that Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby continued to look like dunces every time it's brought up.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to one of the problems of the organization, that is there's a problem with boundaries, because Bill O'Brien as a coach, he was, I would say, above average, but as a general manager, he should not have been given that power. And you see what happened was he wasn't even really given all of the power because it was shared, and Jack Easterby is negotiating contracts. So in terms of the Texans culture, I hope that's something that they have learned from, is to have clear boundaries and keep people in sequestered roles and don't let them double up, because that's what ends up happening.
The most optimistic thing I could say about the Texans this year for me is when Lovie Smith was willing to go on multiple radio shows and be like, yeah, I don't want Nick Cassero in my ear. We're not going to do that. I don't know if that's going to actually be true. Who knows? The Texans have a way of changing their mind on a dime. So I don't put anything past them. But it was nice to hear that from that perspective of, hey, let's let the head coach coach. Interesting thought.
When you look at the finalists for the job, when Smith was named as a finalist, all of them had in common that they had been on headsets with Cassario or could get talked into it, a la Josh McCown.
Right, and what Lovie Smith had that nobody else had, in my opinion, is he built up that relationship with Cal McNair's dad back when they were doing the interviews in 2014. So I think because of that, he had kind of more of a gateway than some would think. And I think that obviously, when you can actually touch Cal, which feels kind of rare, I think that really helps your odds of this organization.
I mean, we also can't underrate the fact that, I mean, Lovie was not supposed to be a finalist. I don't know what happened. I'll maintain all the talk at the Senior Bowl was that they were working with Jonathan Gannon to sign him, and for whatever reason it did not happen. We'll probably never know why it didn't happen, but yeah, I guess Lovie was in a perfect spot to come in and steal that when everything else fell apart.
Yep. Somebody's got to have the job, right? Only 32 of them, that's what I hear.
Yeah, and it sounds like he was kind of kibitzing their interviews throughout the whole month, though, right?
Yeah, he was helping to discuss all the candidates as an internal guy, which is something that, you know, somebody should have like noted that earlier and brought that up and brought that to center stage, because that's a really weird thing to do with somebody who you're going to get rid of, right? Like, if Lovie was going to become, I don't know, the second coming of Romeo Crennel in this organization, as far as like old coach kicked upstairs, like I guess that would make some sense. But it's really hard to have him, you know, vetting all these interviews for you and not come away with the fact that he's got some power.
Yeah, so they should have just promoted him to begin with. Well, at least maybe a week or two and then promoted him. But yeah, that to go for a month and then decide, yeah, we're just going to promote the defensive coordinator. You know, that was just, again, another interesting hire from Houston.
I will say this hire gives some hope that maybe it'll open Cal's eyes if it doesn't work yet again. You know, two Cassario hires, the same results, especially if a coach that, like Rivers said, that Cal might have like been personally excited about to bring aboard with the relationship previously in Houston. It kind of got the clock started, so I'm glad they got somebody different. But
yeah. with Cal McNair recognizing things, I have no optimism. The fact that after they fired David Culley, they asked Nick Cassario how much pressure he felt, and he felt entitled to that whole, like, I don't feel pressure. You guys feel pressure. You guys put pressure on me, but I don't feel it. Like, that whole dance, like, yeah, that told me a lot more than I needed to know about how much power is held right here.
Yeah, I don't know what motivates Cal McNair as the chairman and CEO of the Texans, you know, because I can tell with other owners that it may be winning, that it may be money, that I just can't get a read yet on what's most important to him. I think it's just, frankly, keeping the franchise in Houston.
The thing that's the toughest for me about Cal McNair is that, in theory, what you want is an owner who will sign big checks and shut up. And he does those two things. So you, in theory, you're like, all right, this is a good owner. And then he does the things where he believes and trusts in people that shouldn't really have that trust. And then you've got this team, and that's what you got.
Yep, and it's what fans will have for 2022, with the draft still to go, and then the off-season workouts and the training camps and everything. What's your threshold for this team in terms of win total?
Oh, I will be shocked if they best 6 wins. I don't think they're going, just like last year, the conversation got a little carried away, a little hyperbolic about, oh, this team's the worst ever. They're going to win 0 games. David Culley is the worst ever. He can't coach anything. Like it's not quite that bad, but it's pretty bad.
Okay, so it's the kind of like the inverse, which is there's a little bit of optimism surrounding the team that's now clouding people to where they can't see how bad it is, compared to last year where there was so much negativity they couldn't accept that they're, you know, not going to go 1-16.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always heard from the positive fans more than the negative fans. I guess part of that is me as just... as a person, I go toward criticism rather than away from it, because I'm interested to figure out what I am doing wrong in somebody else's eyes. So maybe that's just kind of how that is. But I've heard from the optimism people, you know, all summer in 2021. I'm hearing from them again in 2022. And there aren't as many of them, because obviously fans are turned off en masse by what's happened here. But they are loud, and they will be loud until the Texans are 1-4 or 0-5 or 2-7 or whatever. That's just kind of how this goes.
Or until we're 1-0, and then they'll tell you that you were wrong the whole time.
And they'll hold that sign about don't need Deshaun and just wave it like randomly.
I do wonder if Houston would have been at least like Carolina last year if Tyrod Taylor would have stayed healthy and they could have got out of the Browns game 2-0. I mean, maybe they get creamed in Buffalo anyway, but they did start out a little optimistic, and it was kind of a surprise that they were tied at halftime in Cleveland.
I wasn't that surprised, because I am the world's I wouldn't say I am, but at that time I felt like the world's one of the world's like 50 people who were like, Baker Mayfield isn't really that good. I've watched Baker Mayfield for the last 2 years. Do you see this? He's not very good. And then he throws a pick to Justin Reed, separates his shoulder or whatever happened with that. And he's hurt the whole year, and now nobody wants him. So there you go.
All right. Rivers McCown, before we get out of here, there's one question I've got to ask you. Where do you think Arlen, Texas is?
So I've always imagined that Arlen was in the Hill Country. I don't think it's, you know, close to Austin. I think it's kind of in maybe those surrounding areas, maybe like a San Angelo or something like that. Obviously it's rhetorical, fake down, like, you know, you're not supposed to actually imagine everything coming together, but that's kind of the general area I feel it's in.
I think it may be in East Texas, somewhere near Jacksonville, maybe a little towards Lufkin. I know that when Khan had to get the job or whatever, that he would have to commute, I think, 2 hours into Houston. So a total of 4 hours. So they mentioned Houston was 2 hours away, and it's always like Dallas is about 90 minutes to an hour away as well. Like, you know, 100 miles away.
Right. Yeah. It's a question that has like little nudges along the way in many different ways, but that you never actually hear answered. So, yeah, it's always just felt more Middle Texas. I don't know why.
Okay. Well, hey, next time we're in Arlen, I'll buy you a drink at the Hotel Arlen.
All right. Just let me get to the prostitution museum first.
Right. Hey, where can folks find you on Twitter, Rivers?
At Rivers McCowan, MCCWN. Remember, you did just go through a head coaching search with that guy. I don't remember his name, but it's kind of like my name. It's the same basic name. And obviously, riversmccowan.com, and I write for Football Outsiders and NBC Sports Edge.
There we go. Where can they find you, John?
You guys can follow me at Texans Doc. Mark, what about yourself?
At The Real Mark Lane on Twitter. Also, check out The Texans Wire on Twitter at The Texans Wire. You can find the Texans Talk podcast on Apple, Google Podcast, and Spotify. You've been listening to the Texans Talk podcast.
Have a good morning, everyone.